Welcome to episode 159 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Kind of following on from last week's episode when we looked at some equinox flower shots from a place called Kinchakuda, I want to look at some cosmos flowers today. Some that are images that I shot at the end of that same day in a field near to the equinox flowers. I was thinking to also look at some white cosmos shots from a few days later, but I haven't really had the time to finish processing the shot, so I'll maybe pick up on those later in a future episode. For now though, let's take a look at my cosmos shots, and I'll talk a little bit about the composition and the makeup of each shot, but also, using a series of five shots, I'll talk you through my thought process as I built on each image and sort of came to a crescendo and then sort of started to fade off a little bit. If you've been following my work at all, you may know that I have a passion for dreamy flowerscapes. One of the reasons that I splashed out for the 300mm f2.8 lens was to enable me to shoot these images better. They can be done with the 70-200 f2.8 to an extent, but to really pick out a small portion of a field of flowers and make something special with it, it often takes a little bit more reach. But you need the wide aperture there as well to really sort of throw the background and foreground in some cases out, nice bokeh, just sort of to get that dreamy effect and to really narrow down the focal plane, the area of the image that's actually going to be in focus. And I'm just totally loving that with the 300mm f2.8. I was shooting for literally just 25 minutes at the end of the day. As the sun got low in the sky, during the first few shots that I was starting to sort of warm up, the sun went down behind the trees on the horizon, which was the timing that I wanted to be there. The first image that I uploaded from this series of five shots is image number 1933. The quality of light changes dramatically as the sun stops hitting the flowers directly, and that's how it is in this first shot. I was just sort of getting into my flowerscape mode. What I basically do is just walk along the edge of a field and peer into the flowers, looking for something that will stand out to me. Here I'd just found some purple cosmos flowers that were sticking up slightly higher than those around them, which is always a good start. There was also that one tall purple flower in the distance, which was going to help to add a little interest to the background. I'm also looking for stuff that might clutter the foreground. As I want some nice bokeh sort of in the foreground there without too many distractions. So obviously, if there's stuff in there that's going to sort of make a bit of a mess, then I'll try to avoid that. At the web size, you might not be able to fully appreciate this, but on a larger print or a large screen, when viewed at full size, the other thing that I'm doing here is basically just giving you lots of points of interest to just pore over. When you look into this shot, there's just so much on the focal plane that you can search through for quite a long time, just enjoying the details. They're sort of standing out against that dreamy background of the bokeh there, and this is not a great example, but this is like as we sort of build up on these and show you my thought process, I wanted to start here. And on the website it's not a great example, but full size on the screen or in a print, it's just one of those shots that you can really sort of delve into. As I say though, I'm just getting started here. And sort of training my eye. One thing that I find that also takes a bit of getting used to, especially when you're looking into these, you're looking at a very small portion of a large field, and often towards the sun. But as with this particular shot, like I say, the sun has gone down now, at least behind the trees. But there's still quite a bright scene. And so it actually takes a little bit for your eyes to get used to the sort of, the complicated sort of items sort of spattered around the image, but then also, you know, just trying to really understand what you're looking at and try to make some sort of sense of it and clear up the edges of the frame and things like that. So basically, I want to just sort of, you know, help you to understand how I'm thinking by building up on this. And as I walked a few meters to the right, literally just a few paces, I noticed some more flowers that were again a little bit higher than the surrounding ones. And so again, I pointed my lens in their general direction and set up another shot. And that is image number 1934. Because of the tallness of the two purple flowers to the left and the nicely positioned pink flower to the right, I decided to shoot this one in portrait mode as opposed to horizontally in landscape mode. I opened up the aperture from f4 in the last shot to f3.5, just one click, one third of a stop. And we're getting slightly dreamier bokeh here, and even less distracting background. There are some nice patches of white and pink in the green though, and I've sort of placed a few flowers in the foreground too, helping to add some foreground bokeh and to, you know, to make the two purple flowers and their stalks stand out a little more. And now that we're getting, you know, what we're seeing is much better composition. It's a little cleaner. And if you look, that I was lucky enough to have had a bee come in, gathering pollen from the right of the two purple flowers. And this is not one, you know, it's not of the two flowers that that we see there. I was actually focused on the other one. And I didn't have time to refocus, but still, you know, it's sharp enough to add a nice sort of addition to the shot. And having shot these Cosmos images quite often now, I very much welcome a little something extra like this. This is why I was very pleased as I walked along a little further and found a dragonfly perched on a Cosmos flower bud that was just about ready to open. And we can see the first shot of this series in image number 1935. As I have no control over where the dragonfly is, of course, I now have to start to compose my images around it instead of just basing my composition on where the flowers are. Before this shot, I actually had a bit of flower, you know, when I say before this shot, the shot or two before this this one that I chose to upload, I actually had a bit of flower overlapping the right wings of the dragonfly. And so, you know, they look nice through this purple foreground bokeh, but I moved to the left just slightly to give myself a clear view of the dragonfly for this shot. You'll notice that I've positioned the purple flower to the top in the top left there, and I've moved vertically to make it about the same distance from the edge of the frame, you know, the same distance from the top as it is from the edge of the frame. And I also sort of stepped back about 2 meters to give myself a little bit of space to the right flower. And I have to admit, it's not going to be that obvious in the websites, but I didn't even see that butterfly that's sitting on the flower to the very right there. But the fact that I moved back to sort of get that flower in helped to sort of really add an extra thing to this shot. It's like an Easter egg, if you've ever heard of them in software. You know, like I say, I really didn't notice that it was even there until I viewed this full frame on the computer, and it felt like a little bonus. You know, you don't see this so much these days, but years ago, software companies used to embed what they call an Easter egg in software, and I don't remember the details. I'm just going to rant about this. I'm going to go off on a tangent a little bit, but there used to be one in, I think it was like Excel 95 or something like that, where if you did a certain series of keystrokes, you can actually get into this 3D world that you could fly around with your mouse, and then you get over by the edge somewhere, and there was a little plaque, like a milestone sort of thing, that had credits for all of the people that developed it. And that was a good example of an Easter egg. And to me, you know, finding this butterfly in the edge, the right side of this image, was like finding an Easter egg. And so it really sort of adds so much more to the image for me. Well, it was there literally for just a few frames and then flew away again, I'm sure, because as I looked, it was only there on a few. Like I say, a little bit of a bonus there. Still at f3.5, there's plenty of things along the plane of focus here to look at. So again, this is a great shot to just pore over. And I printed this out one night last week at 13 by 19 inch, and literally it sort of had the hair on the back of my neck standing up and invoked one of those mad scientist type laughters as I just checked out the details. The dragonfly is incredibly sharp. It's a tribute to the 300mm f2.8, and it should be. You know, for that money, you expect things to be sharp. But you know, the bokeh as well is just so beautiful and creamy, and it's just, you know, it's just one of those shots that just is going to remain one of my favorites. And I basically, you know, the flower. What I've done, just to go back, stop ranting about it, and go back to it a little bit. There's a flower between us and the butterfly that make the butterfly look sort of semi-transparent. That adds to the dreamy effect there. And the shutter speed for this shot was 1/50th of a second at ISO 100. So, you know, you can imagine 1/50th is not that slow, but it's not that fast either, especially when you're at 300mm. And so you can probably imagine that it was a lovely still day. And I didn't have to contend with the flowers blowing around in the breeze at all. And so, you know, we're talking through sort of my thought patterns here, and I've just showed you the first three shots, the two that built up to this as I was walking along, sort of warming up into the flowerscape mode. Came across this really nice dragonfly that added something. Obviously not everyone's going to agree, but what I'm thinking is a nice composition. And, we're going to continue to explore the process, but as it turns out, you know, this is the favorite. This is the one that I'm thinking of, the five that I've uploaded, is the really successful shot. The others I like, but this one is the one that really does it for me. And, you know, what I wanted to talk about a little bit as well is that, you don't always know. Especially when you're working with, you know, these sort of depths of field and things like, and long lenses, so it could be a little bit sort of shuddery as well. You don't even always know when you've nailed the shot. And unless you do, I think it's always good advice just to continue to shoot as long as time, daylight or energy allow. You never know when you're going to improve on your last shot is one thing. And sometimes you don't improve it, but you can continue to make images of value. And, you know, other times your best shot is just so obvious that you can pack up and go home. But there are times when it just isn't that obvious. And this was one of those times, so I just kept shooting. After all, though, you know, we're talking about a 25-minute session here at the end of a day shooting something else. So, you know, this was all a total bonus. Still, I think when I do my wrap up of the 2008 shots, that, you know, I'm probably going to do the same thing that I did last year, which is select 5, maybe 10 images that really stand out to me for 2008, and you will definitely see this shot as one of my top 5 for this year. The dragonfly was staying put. Just rotating his head around a little bit every so often, as they do. And so, you know, trying to increase my portfolio with both vertical and horizontal shots, I flipped the lens around, undid the little nut, the tightening thing there on the tripod mount ring, and then just sort of flipped the lens around into the vertical position. And If you get this shot and the next shot, which is image number 1936, up on your screen together, you'll be able to sort of flip back or compare them side by side, or flip back and forth to see that I've moved back to the left a little bit, around a meter or so. I've basically just took a pace or two to the left between this and the last shot. In the horizontal shot, or the landscape version, There simply isn't enough in the scene to make the shot interesting by just turning the lens from horizontal to vertical. Just a dragonfly alone is wasting an excellent opportunity to make something special. As I rotate around to the left, I moved around but then realigned the lens so that it was still pointing at the one place. It kind of brings that pale pink flower on the left and the more, deeper pink flower behind the white one there in the last shot. It brings those into the left and right sides of the image, around, kind of rotating around the dragonfly. And so now we've got a much more interesting foreground and background. I've mentioned before that taking care of your bokeh is very important, and this is a prime example. Just because something's out of focus, it cannot be ignored. Or, it can, but you're wasting opportunities. Note too, at this point, I drop the 1.4 times extender or teleconverter between the camera and the lens, so I'm shooting at 420mm now to get in even closer and maximize on the elements in the frame. The dragonfly is still over there on the right side, still sitting patiently while I finish my shots, and the foreground bokeh has a lot of interest. There's patches of colour. There's also lots of nice sort of semi-focused flowers in the background too. And, generally there's plenty of detail across the plane of focus in the middle there for you to just sort of pour over if you're looking at a larger version of this. Finally, in image 1937, now that I have the 1.4 times extender on, I've swung a little bit to the left again to re-include the two purple cosmos flowers from the earlier composition. But this time they're taking up the top left corner, and there's some nice sort of patches of colour in the bokeh that below that sort of along the left side. And it's not as good a picture in my opinion, as the second one that we looked at, but still pretty nice with lots of shapes and stuff to look at. And even with the extender, the dragonfly is still incredibly sharp here. As the light dropped, I was shooting at 1/20th of a second by now, and that's with an aperture of f4, which is the maximum aperture, the widest aperture for the 300mm with the extender fitted. So still pleased that there was no wind, with this relatively slow shutter speed and all that. I wanted to just quickly recap that I'm most definitely exposing for highlights here, which is pretty much a norm for me now for most work. As the light drops, you have to make a choice as to whether or not to show the subject as it is, getting gradually darker, or allow the light to sort of build up a little bit more and lighten the shot. Sometimes I use the darkness to add mood, as I recall doing when shooting some red crown cranes flying out, back to their roost at the end of a day, and it was really very, very dark. And so I allowed the shots to be dark, just to sort of convey that mood. That was at the end of 2006. And I think I remember saying at the time, it was dark, so I wanted to show it that way. But more so now, I'm just thinking that using this light at the end of the days, where the sun's gone down, you've got a bright, clear sky that's still being lit, but it's just a totally different quality of light with like pastel colours. And so, for this sort of shot now, I'm basically just sort of using the fact that there's no direct light, and therefore very little contrast, but then using the exposure to bring out the colours like this, it really just works for me. So despite there actually being less light, sort of hitting the subject, I still expose the shot so that the histogram is just about touching the right edge, and this helps to give that dreamy effect, along with the nice bokeh from using the lens wide open or close to it. I think that each of these images does stand up by itself, or would, you know, I wouldn't have uploaded them to the gallery if I didn't. But also, you know, I thought that it would be worth walking you through these five shots just to show you how the shot evolved and you know, how it all turned out. And you know, to me, you know, I think it's the middle one there is definitely the best of the batch. But moving through and sort of exploring the other possibilities was definitely something that I did and I do in this sort of time, this sort of location. So I just thought, you know, sometimes I just wanted to share this whole process with you rather than just selecting the best one and just talking about that. As I say, you know, sometimes you know when you've nailed it, and others you just need to explore other possibilities just to make sure, and that's definitely what I was doing on this day, and so I thought I'd walk you through that. On the whole concept of what I'm calling flowerscapes, I'm finding now more than ever that with the resolution of the 1DS Mark III, and that which many more of you will be enjoying soon with the 5D Mark II, I'm tending to enjoy the details within the details. I've enjoyed shooting these flowerscapes for some time now, but as we get more and more resolution, and it's not just with these with the flowerscapes, but as we get more and more resolution, it's just so much more gratifying to peer into and almost delve into the details of a good quality print. Although I still enjoy macro work, I'm finding more enjoyment a lot of the time in looking at the detail in the dragonfly here as an example, as a much smaller part of a larger scene than, you know, just a close-up of the dragonfly. It's like another one that springs to mind is the crane dancing in the distance in one of my shots from Hokkaido in January 2008. And, you know, having the resolution to be able to sort of, you know, look up close and count all of the wing feathers splayed out on a bird that's represented at just 12 millimeters on a 13 by 19 inch print. And it's just something else. It's changing my photography for sure. And the only thing that I'm not happy about is that, you know, the only way that you can appreciate this in my photos without actually buying a print would be for me to publish a full-sized image online. And even then, you'd have to go away and print it out at 13 by 19 yourself. This is never going to happen, of course, but the web version just doesn't do them justice. So it's really frustrating that I'm getting so much sort of happiness and sort of joy out of looking at these things and talking about them with you, but I really, you know, I can't allow you to sort of see that at its best. I can't enable you to see that at its best, just, you know, with the current technology. Or obviously, you know, half of the images would just be stolen and used, and, you know, it kind of would defeat the object of it all. But it's just a little bit, it's very frustrating that, you know, you can't share this this experience with me. Of course, if you've got one of the later cameras, and those of you that I'm sure will run out and buy the 5D one, the 5D Mark II, once you start shooting with this number of megapixels, you'll definitely start to appreciate what I'm saying. Just a few more things to add before we do close. One is that I've tagged a whole bunch of flowers in my flower shots in my online gallery at martinbaileyphotography.com with the flowerscape keyword. I'll put a link into the show notes to display all of the tagged images. Now, I'm not suggesting that you go away and look at them all, but if you're interested, you know, click on the link and take a look at the thumbnails and, you know, just open a few that you might want to see more of. There are a few reasons why I've done this. One is that I just thought it might be interesting for you to see how our photography evolves over time. It was interesting for me to go through my flower album and see which ones could be tagged. And I've actually done after having done an initial tagging, I went back through and removed a whole bunch of them, which just didn't fit in the list. And there was a lot, you know, despite me trying to shoot this sort of image for quite a few years now. I'll probably do another cull before I release this episode, or shortly after. As you know, there's still a fair few in there that I don't really want to be dubbing flowerscape. But you know, another thing that I noticed was just how much better these shots have become since getting the 70 to 200 millimeter f/2.8 initially, which took them much further than my initial attempts with the 100 to 400 lens. And then in turn, how much better these shots have become again now that I'm shooting many of them with the 300 millimeter f/2.8. So you know, it's like the megapixel thing. Obviously, if megapixels are going to cause you grain, then I definitely think that there's something wrong with the idea of putting 15 megapixels in a compact camera, despite the fact that I'm hoping to pick up my PowerShot G10 at the end of the month. That just doesn't seem right, you know, because I know that it's definitely having an effect on the grain. But when you've got low grain, or at least, you know, for the 1DS, it's not like the new Nikons or hopefully what the new 5D will be like. But still, you know, it's got very, very usable ISOs up to 800 or so. And so when it's like that, I think, you know, the 21 megapixels is nice to have. And, you know, I think that people that say it's not about megapixels, I read a comment recently, I think it was on Amazon, a review of the G10. There was a guy on there saying that he was a professional photographer and he wanted the company's making cameras to, I'm not reading this out, but I'm just doing it from memory. But he said something like he wanted the camera manufacturers to understand that it's not about pixels and go back to 6 or 7 megapixels. And if that guy's a professional photographer, then he's going to be out of business very soon. Simply because, well, I mean, I'm being a little bit harsh, but if professional means he's selling work to print in books and things, you can't print an image in a book at 300 dpi if you only have 6 or 7 megapixels. It just doesn't work. The math doesn't work. So, you know, if you're serious about your photography, then, you know, you need a few more megapixels than that. And if, like me, you enjoy printing very large and sort of and delving into the details, then you know the more megapixels the better. It's just, you know, it's simple math. So, you know, I don't want to go onto a rant about this, and I'm sure that there'll be lots of you that decide to tell me that I'm wrong. But, you know, I know having seen this, having seen things change over the years, and having sold prints from anything down from my 3 megapixel D30 right up to the new ones that I'm making with the 21 megapixels, it makes a difference. And especially if you want to blow up to A3 Plus, and hopefully in the relatively near future to like down to A1, you need the megapixels. So, you know, it depends what you want. And if the professional guy that made the comment on Amazon is basically only selling things for web use and stuff like that, or, you know, really doesn't need to be able to print at full size, you know, full pages at 300 dpi, then that's fair enough, you know, if that's what you're into. But I'm not, and I think that most people will start to appreciate how much difference this can make to your photography once it becomes more affordable with the 5D Mark II. Anyway, jump off my soapbox there. I did want to say one other thing, actually. Let me just jump back on that soapbox. I was just saying, you know, how much better these flowerscapes are getting with the 300 millimeter f/2.8. And you know what I was about to say earlier when I sort of went off on a tangent on the megapixels. People will also tell you that it's not about the equipment, and I can tell you that it's all about the equipment when you have a specific purpose in mind. I agree that we shouldn't just get hung up on gear, not for gear's sake at least, but if you have a clear problem to solve to realize your vision, then, you know, it may be that you just have to pick up something additional to help you to achieve that. These shots that I've been doing, these recent shots, are just simply not possible with your standard sort of kit lens, standard zoom. Sure, you know, I feel lucky that I'm able to add these lenses to my kit, but as I do, I realize more and more that it's so much more about the equipment than many people would like to admit. So that's it for this week. Let's wrap it up there. One quick reminder to look at the mbpworkshops.com website if you're interested in joining me in Hokkaido for a 9-day photography tour and workshop shooting wildlife and winter landscapes in the best location for this type of photography on the planet. For those that cannot make the full 9 days, there's a dropout option in the middle, middle of the fifth day, after the majority of the wildlife shooting is done. For full details, check out the mbpworkshops.com website. And with that, all that remains to be said is you have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.